There's an old joke. Two elderly women are at a Catskill Mountain resort, and one of them says, "Boy, the food at this place is really terrible." The other one says, "Yeah, I know, and such small portions." Well, that's essentially how I feel about life, full of loneliness and misery and suffering and unhappiness, and it's all over much too quickly. The other important joke for me is one that's usually attributed to Groucho Marx, but I think it appears originally in Freud's Wit and Its Relation to the Unconscious. And it goes like this, I'm paraphrasing. I would never want to belong to any club that would have someone like me for a member. That's the key joke of my adult life in terms of my relationships with women.
That is a clip from Woody Allen's 1977 Academy Award-winning comedy, Annie Hall. Woody Allen, of course, is one of the great comedians and filmmakers of our time. Allen is notoriously media shy, yet Eric Lax has had regular conversations with him over the past 36 years. Lax has turned these conversations into a book called Conversations with Woody Allen, His Films, the Movies, and Movie Making. Eric Lax had a conversation with Steve Paulson about Woody Allen. Lax also shared only with, to the best of our knowledge, a few exclusive clips of Allen's comments. Lax told Steve that Woody Allen used to feel limited when writing screenplays. He'd never write anything that he himself couldn't perform.
It's fascinating to think about that because we mainly know Woody Allen, I think, for the comic persona that he has created in his movies. I mean, being an actor, I mean, yes, we certainly know him as a director as well, but I mean, the most obvious way we know him as an actor. And then in the interviews you've done with him, he is remarkably dismissive of his own acting abilities. He calls himself a silly comic who plays for laughs and says he has a minuscule acting range, and he talks about quitting acting. And I want to play an excerpt from one of the interviews that you did with him when you ask him if he'll miss acting.
Miss acting? No. No, I don't, because I don't miss it when I don't do it. And there have been times I've gone a couple of pictures.
Yeah.
A couple of pictures is a couple of years.
Yeah, I know.
No, it doesn't mean anything.
There's no sense of, well, I've, you know, that's end of that chapter. We'll go on to the next one.
You know, I've been in films my whole adult life, yeah, almost. And I don't think there's anything about it that I would miss. I'm happy to do it, but I don't, you know, if tomorrow I couldn't get financing,
right,
you know, I'm very happy to write plays. I'm very happy to sit home and try and write a book, maybe to write an autobiography or a memoir or something. Just, you know, I just like to work.
I have to say, this is a remarkably unromantic view of a life in the movies. You get a sense that Woody sees himself as just a working stiff from Brooklyn who happened to fall into a nice career in the movies. And okay, sure, if he's going to give up his acting gig, that's fine.
Yeah, I think there's a certain truth to that. I think the other part of it is he has a capacity, I think, unlike anybody else I know, to have so many different ideas going on in his head at once that he can choose from to do, that it's not a sense for him of, oh my goodness, if I'm not allowed to do this, what am I going to do? It's, if I can't do this, then I'll do that. The other thing that he's done is that from the start, he was a very successful, starting at 16, writing jokes for Broadway columnists. He was well paid for his sense of humor, and he knew early on that he could make people laugh, and he saw his comedy, once he started to make films, as a way to get into the film business. But always, even before he started making movies, he loved drama more than he loved comedy. He always thought that he talks a lot in the book about how, for him, it's just more satisfying. And so he thought that by getting a good foothold as a comic, he would then have the freedom or the space to be able to start doing dramas. And he found, a bit to his surprise, that when he tried early on, the audience and the critics didn't necessarily come with him. Interiors, for instance, or Stardust Memories. Movies that, in retrospect, I think are much better as they were when they were received, except by a few people.
These were his serious movies, which were a huge departure from the better-known comedies like Annie Hall and Manhattan.
Right, or even Take the Money and Run, which is just nothing but a series of gags really strung together. For him, though, it's that he once said, you know, you have to present a moving target. There's a trap. He said, people will say to you, oh, we love the comedies. Just do what you've been doing. And people will go along with that for some period of time. And then one day you'll come out with the very thing that they've always wanted you to do and have appreciated. And they say, oh, it's the same old thing. Who wants to go see that? Why doesn't he do something else? I'm so tired of this. And so he knew that rather than face that, it was better for him to say, I'm tired of this, I want to try something else, and people could come or not. He quotes a thing from Richard Schickel, the Time magazine film critic and also the wonderful biographer of several subjects, where Schickel said that at one point along the line, Woody's audience left him. And Woody said, you know, it was very nice of him to do that, but the truth is, he said, I think I left my audience. When I started to do things that were outside of the realm of what they had expected, then I lost some people along the line. And I think it was not really until Match Point a couple of years ago that he was able to do a drama that was both satisfying to himself and also to really a broad audience. And it's proved in that case by this was far and away the most financially successful film that he's ever made. Here's a murder story that he's not in, a very dark story, and it did almost $100 million worldwide.
I want to pick up this idea about Woody kind of resenting being pigeonholed as a filmmaker of comedies, because that came up in this interview that you did with him. And I want to play another excerpt, and this is, I think, right after he made his film Scoop. He makes the suggestion that he's had a wasted career.
You know, when I finished Scoop, I thought to myself, you know, what a nuisance. I mean, I'm wasting my time with this little comedy. And I could have been doing, you know, another piece of work like Match Point or a significant, you know, a more meaty thing. What am I wasting my time with this? Now, I wish I had come to this conclusion 25 years ago, but I did. And I don't know that I could have implemented it then easily because there was a fierce pressure on me from many people to do comedy.
So what do you make of Woody Allen's put-downs of his own comedies? I mean, these are the movies that made him famous.
Right. You have to read kind of between the lines here. I don't think he wants to disown those films in any way. He says, you know, people think that I hate comedy or that I denigrate. He says, it's not that. He said, look, I would be stupid if I said anything other than this, is that I've had a wonderful career from it. I've made a lot of money from it. I've made many people happy by what I've done. And I've made some very satisfactory films of that. He said, but in the end, that's not all I wanted to do. That as he started out in his artistic career, he saw himself being earlier in life than he is. He's in his 70s now. He saw himself in his being able in his 30s or his 40s to be able to make the switch to drama. And he found that for a number of reasons that didn't work. It wasn't a case of him saying, oh, I'm going to go back and make these films that I hate, because that wasn't the case at all. That it was, he just was unable to grow in the way that he most wanted.
And yet the other side of that is that if you were to ask most people what the most memorable Woody Allen movies were, I'm sure they would go back to Annie Hall and Manhattan. I mean, these films that seem to express the zeitgeist of that time, of the late 70s, when Woody Allen really was in the center of the world. And I mean, most people would see him as being now a relatively marginal figure in the movie world. And yet he himself doesn't even seem to value those particular movies that highly. He has other movies of his that he likes much more.
Yes, what's so funny about those two films is that in the case of Manhattan, right up to the time it was released, he wanted to buy it back from United Artists and redo it. And in Annie Hall was a far cry from the movie that he envisioned. The film was originally called Anhedonia, the inability to derive pleasure. And it was a much more kind of stream of consciousness interior monologue of a guy played by Woody and the problems that he would have in that. But as he would put it together and was doing it, even Marshall Brickman, who co-wrote it with him, said, you know, I can't follow this story. And, you know, and as Woody said, he's the co-writer of it. But he said what people did find when he was the few people who were watching it is they became very interested in the story of Alvy and Annie. And so that Keaton-Woody relationship became more and more the film, and that's really how it became. That's not how it started out. That's just how it ended up. It was one of the great things about filmmaking, of course, is how much is done in the editing room and what you're able to do when you go back and reshoot.
Now, the other thing that comes out in these interviews that you've done with Woody Allen is he seems to be, in real life, not at all the person who he projects in his screen roles. I mean, he's obviously a very funny guy when he's on stage, but when, you know, he's not in front of a camera, he's quite a serious guy and clearly a workaholic.
Yes, clearly a workaholic. I mean, the problem with Woody in terms of people confusing his persona who they see on film and him in real life is that the two people dress exactly the same and talk exactly the same. So it's hard to differentiate them. But as he points out, he says, I didn't make this character. He said, I wrote a character that as people came to accept, he said, I saw what worked and that character came out of what worked. And so he learned how, he knows how to play that character, he knows how to talk like, he knows the timing and the cadence and the delivery for that person. But in real life, if he were a director or a writer or an artist who was as in such turmoil and panic as that character and kind of so out of control of all these things that affect him, he would never be able to get these films done. What you realize is that in real life, he's somebody who has really total control over virtually every aspect of what he does. He has had from the start something almost unheard of in filmmaking is that he has complete control over the movie.
Well, I want to play one more excerpt from this interview you did back in 2006 where he talks about the downside of making movies, which is marketing.
You know, you can't just give them the film and leave them holding the bag. You got to help a little bit. So promotion usually entails, you know, traveling places and answering questions and being interviewed and trying to tell people how great your film is without seeming to say it's great. You know, it's just so silly. And it never means anything, you know. And raising money and sitting with people who want to do ads that appeal to the lowest common denominator when you want your ad. You know, there's nothing really to miss.
It's enough to swear off movie making forever.
Well, it is, you know, and that for him is that in the end, his feeling is that a good film will draw its audience and that word of mouth has a great deal to do with it. What's been astonishing to watch over these years, I mean, one of the real pleasures of this book for me, and I like to think for him in some way too, is that most times when you're writing about somebody, even when they're trying to do a summary of their lives, they're talking from a specific point of view. It's a snapshot from them at 60 or 70 or 80 or whatever it is. And what we see here with him over the years is this is like a family album. You see him in his 30s all the way into his 70s talking about what goes on. And he's been consistent in this all the way through. And part of the reason that he so dislikes having to go out and promote them is, A, he doesn't think it does a lot of good. But even more than that, it's that by the time the film is released, he is well into the next one. Truthfully, the day that he finishes editing a film, while he's even editing it, he's already on to the next one. So by the time that film comes out, he's ready to start shooting the next.
Now, Woody Allen has a strange combination of qualities. On the one hand, he's very self-confident about what he does. I mean, there's a sense that he really doesn't care that much about what critics say. You know, they've been blasting him for years now. Mm-hmm. And yet, on the other hand, he is totally dismissive, at least the way he presents himself in these interviews, as his significance artistically. I mean, he says he's had no impact on younger filmmakers, which I simply don't believe, and he claims that he has not achieved anything significant artistically.
Right, and he says, look, the only thing standing between me and a great film is me.
Eric Lax is the author of Conversations with Woody Allen, His Films, the Movies, and Movie Making. He spoke with Steve Paulson. Our thanks to Lax and Allen for giving us permission to air a few excerpts from their conversations.